I will never forget the time.
Parent came in and parent-teacher conferences after I had begun implementing standards-based grading. She had lots of questions about the progress report. First question was about why there weren't any tests or quizzes on this particular progress report, and I had to explain to her how the assessments were or had been taken. But rather than reporting the actual assessments, the student learning was reported through specific learning targets. And so I went through the specific learning targets and mentioned how this represented the big ideas that her son, let's call him Johnny, had learned so far that quarter. Then she had a question about why there was it was a 4-point scale. You know, what's going on with this 4-point scale? So I had to explain to her what the rubric looked like, and what a 4 and a 3.5 and a 3 and a 2 and a 1 meant. She started to nod her head, but she still looked pretty confused. And then she asked the typical parent-teacher conference question: How does my son Johnny get his grade up? And so I had to explain to her there wasn't any extra credit. And that he really hadn't dug himself into a hole, but indeed all he had to do was show me that he understood the big ideas in a reassessment type format. She really wasn't sure what this might look like, so I just explained, hey, I was more worried or interested in Johnny's ability to show me that he understood the big ideas. I wasn't necessarily interested in when. Well, before the end of the next grading period would be ideal, but I had to explain to her that I was more interested in what he knew rather than when he knew it. She's just still kind of confused, so I had to, reiterate that fact again and say, if he comes in and shows me that he's at a 4 level of understanding on this specific learning target that he's at a 2 at right now, that I'd actually erase the 2 in the grade book and change it to a 4. And she kind of looked at me and I reassured her that it wasn't some sort of game or trick I was playing, and that it wasn't going to be any late penalties or anything. And after some more conversation, she really got into it and really started seeing the benefits of standards-based grading. And I'll never forget the way she ended that conversation. She said, "I really wish they would have done or had something like this when I was in school." And she left that conversation just really pleased with the opportunities that her son had in place in this math class. At that point, I knew that standards-based grading was just the way to do it, and there was no turning.
Hey Matt, how are you today?
Hey, doing good. Been a while since we've done this thing. Let's get back
That.
at it.
All right, so lightning round with students in mind. Got an email yesterday from a teacher in Central City. She teaches in Central City, Iowa. I don't actually know where Central City is. I'm guessing in the central part of the state, but Christina Merritt, she's a high school math teacher. And so she sent an email. And we'll attach the email to the blog post so you can read it. But she had a couple of questions for us about standards-based grading. A little bit of background. She said she's one of the high school math teachers, and beginning in the fall, they're switching to standards-based grading. So she's wondering about a couple of things. First one, and these are all pretty common concerns. That's why I thought I could dump this on you without much background. So, says my main concern is how do you transform your standards into final grades A, B, C, D, F? She says co sh that colleges are not interested in a standards-based report, but they want to see what the letter grade is. And so, what do you think, Matt, as a math teacher?
Well, first, I want to first say nice job to this particular teacher, Christina, for taking this idea by the horns and asking some questions to other folks that have a perspective. Not that you or me are the experts, but we're people that maybe have been doing it for a little while. So I think it's admirable for this particular teacher to be taking the next steps. As you said, Russ, she's asking some really common questions. And this first one here is one that we get asked a lot. And I think true standards-based reporting wouldn't involve letter grades. But for this particular example, I think that chances are she's probably going to still have to report letter grades. But I want to first caution or first tell her that if, the time came where she didn't have to do letter grades, colleges would still figure out a way to accept that report card. I think of homeschool students that, as an example, may or may not get letter grades, and they still figure out a way to get into college. Colleges still accept them. So if the time ever comes for Christina or for anyone else to be able to have a report card that does not have any letter grades, don't be concerned about colleges not as them being the hurdle. Now back to reality, chances are, again, that Christina will have to give out A, B's, C's, D's, and F's. There's lots of different ways you can do it. For me, myself, my own experience, what I did is, since it's standards-based reporting, is I reported all the standards on a four-point scale. It doesn't necessarily have to be a four-point scale. Marzano recommends a four-point scale. Whatever that scale is, a 10-point scale, a 5-point scale. So the grade book is no longer tests and quizzes and homework. It's just standards. And so then the question comes, after all those standard scores are in there, how do you translate that into a letter grade? Well, Christina, there's lots of different ways you can do it. I had PowerSchool at the time, and there wasn't really a good way to, as you suggest in your email, do something like a student must be at a 4 level out of 4 on 90% of the standards to get an A. I think that would be ideal in my mind, is that teachers would be able to say, you know, a student must have mastered X number of standards to get an A or X number of standards to get a B. But
let me jump in quick.
Sure.
So just to make a quick plug for ActiveGrade, I was just reading a blog post yesterday, today, whatever, where they've rolled out some new stuff. And one of the features is that you can say to get an A, you have to have, you know, 90% of your standards are at a 4 out of 5 plus something else. So
let's link to that post, because I read that too, and it's really good. And I think what they're doing with ActiveGrade totally is along the philosophy of everything we're talking about. But again, chances are for Christina, she's probably locked into PowerSchool, right, like many districts are, at least currently.
Yep. I think the moral of the story is you have to work within, you know, some of those structures given. And to me, one thing I would say to her is figure out what works for you, but then get your administrators involved in the hurdles that you're having to overcome. Because if they can see that what they're providing isn't working, then they're going to be more, I would hope they would be more receptive to finding what will work better.
Yeah, definitely. And so probably have to do something like, you could, just for starters, you could average all the standards. So if there's 10 standards and you're at a 4-point scale, it's out of 40 points. You can just go with a strict percentage, 90% or better as an A or some flavor of an A. So that's just a really simple way of kind of entering into the conversation, is just to average your standard score. It's not ideal, but it's one way of doing it. Russ, do you have any other thoughts there?
My only thought is much less, I won't say much less, it's less practical than what Matt's saying. I think that's probably what you'll end up doing.
Yeah.
But in a language arts classroom, this is what I would do if I were faced with that question. I would, in my summer, if you can't, listeners, if you can't tell, Henry's with us today, so I appreciate you ignoring that. What I would do is I would call up a few of the people who are going to end up with these grades. So if you're doing these grades for colleges, then why not talk to those college instructors? Give a call to the University of Iowa, Iowa State, a few of the smaller schools, and find out. So if you want a letter grade from me in 11th grade English, what do you want that letter grade to represent? You know, here are the standards I'm teaching my students, but what do you want me to convey to you in this letter grade? Since I'm really doing it for you, what are you looking for out of it? Now, again, like I said, that's not as practical as averaging out the standards, but I would think that, you know, just to go back to the purpose of the grade, if the purpose is to communicate with, then it seems like, you know, if the purpose is to communicate with college professors, go to them and see what it is they're looking for.
Yep. And if you need to weight some specific standards higher than others, it creates a little bit of confusion, but as long as you communicate that with your parents and your students, I think it's still a good first step there.
Yeah. Second, she says, my second concern is homework. In the past, she's given students completion points. However, she's been reading on some blogs, possibly yours, Matt, that some teachers don't incorporate homework into the final grade. So how do you incorporate homework in your classroom? Is it required for students to do it? Do they have to have completed all their homework to pass the course? this is kind of your bread and butter, so I'll pass it off to you.
Sure. I think she nails it. She says, I've been reading on other blogs that they don't incorporate homework into their final grades, as it is strictly standards. That's one of the tenets of standards-based grading, is that you're reporting only on standards. And the standards are up to you or to your school or your collaborative learning team or your PLC, whoever's determining what those standards are, your district curriculum director. So you want to be as pure as possible in reporting out just the standards. You're reporting out students' understanding of ideas, not students' completion of some sort of task. And in that spirit, I think, and also all the readings on homework indicate that homework's practice. And so that's not worth reporting, at least when it, as it comes, at least as it relates to completing, to calculating the grade. If you want to somehow report homework completion, I think there's still good reasons for doing that, to let parents know, hey, Johnny's completing his homework this week or he's not. I still think it's worth reporting, but in a explicitly different way or separately from the targets. Now, there's purists out there that say you shouldn't even grade it. I'm really big into feedback, and I think you should be giving students feedback, but that feedback should be how they're doing, and that feedback should not be tied to some sort of number that you give them when reporting that out. So if you have to report it, I would just report it as being complete or not complete, and definitely not letting that number influence the academic grade itself. The other thing there is, are students required to do it? You have to hammer home the idea with your students that homework's practice, homework's a feedback opportunity. You can leverage the use of homework. You can have conversations like, how many of you would do the homework if it's worth 1 point or 2 point or 3 points? And then talk to them about how their lack of doing homework, or when they do the homework, how that might impact how well they learn, how well they do on an assessment. And then have that same conversation with the parents so they know what your philosophy is. Don't just stop grading homework and expect students to get it. You have to talk with the students about why you're doing what they're doing and why it's valuable. In my opinion, the sooner and more often you talk about that to them, the quicker they're going to be able to jump on board. Don't wait till like the third week to talk to them about it. Continually talk to them about what you're doing and why you're doing it. The other thing I think is important to talk about here is that you can also, as I mentioned earlier, leverage that. You can, for example, when you're doing reassessments, you can say, all right, you're going to be reassessed on this, but I first need you to complete these particular problems. And so you can, in a way, use it as kind of like an insurance policy with students to show them the explicit connection between learning and demonstrating understanding of this standard and practicing this skill. I think, Russ, for you as an English teacher, you really get that with rough drafts and revisions and things like that. So even though this person's a math teacher, talk to us about how you might use that in an English classroom or language arts.
Yep. Well, the first thing that I would just reiterate from what you said is separating the two. It's not necessarily an all or nothing, like I can only report the standards now and so I can't do any of this other stuff. There's different ways that you can report out responsibility type of things, like work completion and handing things in on time, whoever sets that deadline, you know, whatever. The way I've been doing it is when students... So as far as homework goes, the reason I was kind of passing this one off to you, I don't really do homework. And that's not like a badge I wear or anything. It's just the fact that with sixth graders, I just don't do homework. I don't even really know what I would assign as homework. They have like reading assignments or they have independent reading books that they're just reading on their own time. But those just play into, It's that practice reading that we'll then use in certain activities. So I don't really have much to say about this, unfortunately. I think you covered it pretty well. Okay. So last question is about assessments. How often do you assess kids over standards? Let's see, multiple times. Can they retest? How many times can they retest? Do you have any sort of rules or guidelines for retesting? Before or after school for tutoring, or for when does the reassessment take place? That's one that I've been thinking about lately, and I'm going to be changing that policy somewhat in my room next year. So I guess I could start with that.
Sure. Yeah, go for it.
Kind of the guideline that we'll have next year is that when a project, so let's say a writing project, is when it's turned in, because my students determine their deadlines within a 2 week period. They'll determine when that project gets turned in. When it's turned in, I expect it to be a published piece. Like I expect it to be in final draft form. And so if if that final draft, since they've determined when it comes in, if that final draft has major holes that needs big revision, that revision and then the reassessment is going to happen outside of the class period, whether that's before school, after school, if I happen to have an open prep period or something like that. Just the guideline will be that when you've said you're done with it, if you don't end up being done, then that's going to come out of other time as opposed to class time. We don't really have a built-in intervention time in our schedule, and so that intervention time will come, you know, before school, after school, that kind of thing. So that's the way I work. And as far as how many times, as many times as possible, or as many times as needed, to me, it's not even necessarily like about time, because I think so much cycling back through. So every writing assignment is going to cover a lot of our standards, and so there's so much cycling that we'll just be constantly assessing it. And in a writing classroom, it's not so much, I don't even really think of assessments anymore, just because there's so many times throughout our time together with students that they can show me their writing skills. So
I want to share what I did in the math classroom and then talk about, kind of like you, Russ, what I think would be a good idea for revising. First of all, I'd have lots of practice and feedback through homework and practice problems and so forth, where students would get opportunities to get feedback from each other, from me, and from themselves, self-assessment. Then they would take a quiz based on a short number of standards, and they would get some feedback on that. It would not be an actual number, though, but it would be standards-based feedback. How well are you understanding this big idea? How are you understanding the next big idea, and so forth? And they'd have some opportunities to talk with each other, again, self-assessment, peer assessment, and assessment, or peer feedback, self-feedback, assessment, and feedback from me as to how they're doing in those ideas. And so that's what happened first. And then once they got to the actual assessment that was going to go into the grade book, they were assessed on the same standards. And that's where the first time that the number came into play. I don't know if this is necessarily the best way of doing it, but that's just the way that I did do it. And then the reassessments after the one went in the grade book tended to take place outside of class. Looking back, I really firmly believe that traditionally in schools and in my classroom, learning was the variable and time was the constant. I wanted to make time the variable and learning be the constant. And so with that in mind, I really now more or less believe that those reassessments should have been taking place as much or as frequently during class, whether that's spiraling in the explicit standards that maybe students didn't get, a lot of students, or somehow rearranging my class time to make reassessments more of a reality during class. In my class, there was not a limit on the number of times students can reassess, because my overarching goal is that every kid would learn every single standard. And if that's not my goal, then I'm going to limit reassessments. If it is my goal, I'm going to figure out a way, whether that's infinite reassessments or forced reassessments, to really make that possible for students, whether they're in band before and after school or not, whether they're in music and clubs before and after school or not. Involvement before or after school, or their schedule or their home life, shouldn't impact the opportunities that they have. And so I was really, I believe that if I went back in the classroom, which I hope to in some way someday, is to make it more of a classroom thing rather than a before or after school thing. I think it's only fair to our students.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. I think what it sounds like you're saying is that the idea is that there's these standards that we want students to learn.
Yeah.
And so standards-based grading is just saying that the way that we grade and report out their learning is by looking at these standards. And so that you just have to keep hammering home that idea that's what it all comes back to.
Yep.
Am I finding out whether or not they have learned these standards? And I want in the reporting, in the grading, this is kind of what my last blog post was about, that's just part of the classroom, is the reporting and the grading. And so as far as reporting and grading goes, you just have to keep finding out where they are in regards to the standards.
And I'd add a word in there that I know is implied in your phrase there, Russ. It's the feedback too. There'd be feedback that's explicit to students, not just you're doing a good job, but you clearly understand this, or you still need some more help in this, or the students, or you're probing students to make those statements about themselves too. Is I'm not very good at conventions, but I'm really good at theme or something, or main idea or something like that. So We're creating the culture in the class so that students will be saying that about themselves and each other, and we'll be saying that as well. Yep. I think one of the things that can happen, and it happened to me, is when I really started getting into standards-based grading, is I started thinking that there's only really one way to do it. And I think that there's value in a building and a team coming up with some overarching things we're all going to agree on so that it can be communicated to parents. But at the same time, there needs to be some flexibility within there that of how you do it, tight and loose. We're going to be tight on this idea of everybody's going to be reporting student learning based on standards and providing feedback and multiple opportunities for assessment. But it can be loose on how that happens underneath these overarching themes, and which I'm assuming that's what's happening at this teacher's school too. It's kind of what it sounds like, is she's been given this overarching mission, and now she's trying to figure out what it looks like. And again, I want to applaud this teacher for reaching out. She's going to be better, and her students are definitely going to benefit because of it.
Definitely. All right. This was just kind of an overview, just a quick overview, and I think one of the reasons we wanted to record it and send it out there is to get other people's thoughts. So we will post this as soon as we can and then open up the comments and see what people think.
If there's any other overarching questions out there or things that maybe we've talked about in the past or alluded to that maybe someone wants us to talk about, or maybe we could talk about it with them on the air, feel free to contact us via Twitter or comment or email or whatever, and we can do some more of these less formal WSI.
All right, Russ, it's been a pleasure. Don't forget, man, we're always here with students in mind. Have a good one.